This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by PureFlix's Samson, the biblical story of the last of the Hebrew judges. Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Samson, in theaters now. More information is available at samson.movie.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it!
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks so much for joining us again. Well, there's no doubt that we have seen a surge in the numbers of self-identified transgendered people in the last several years. In the UK, 14 gender identity clinics have seen referral increases of up to 100% in the past year. And the adults who identify as transgender in the United States, the percentage is double that of the estimate produced in 2011. Here in the U.S., 1.4 million adults identify as transgender. But what is going on to cause this? Have there been that many transgendered people hiding in closets all these years, or could there be a cultural cause for it? Well, we're going to talk about this today with Peter LaBarber, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. And Peter also has a late-breaking update on the CPAC situation. You know, we talked recently with Brian Kamenker from Mass Resistance about the fact that his group, a pro-family group that works against the left's and the far left and pro-LGBT curriculum in schools and all sorts of other important causes, they were approved for a CPAC, and then they had the approval withdrawn, even as CPAC is allowing the log cabin Republicans to appear. So we're going to cover all of that now. Peter, welcome. Great to have you.
Oh, thanks, Janet. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's start with the CPAC stuff. Bring us up to speed, maybe bring the listeners up to speed on your involvement here and what the latest is.
Well, this is a terrible thing, the redefinition of conservatism now to accommodate the gay movement, I guess. CPAC refused, went back on its the application of Brian Kamenker and Mass Resistance, as you said. And then right after that, we put in $2,000 for an exhibitor table for Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. And I just received word that the donor who put up that money for us had just got it refunded. So apparently we have been refused. I had not heard anything from CPAC in over a week. I called them, I emailed, no communication. So it appears now that Americans for Truth About Homosexuality has also been deemed not fit for CPAC, the same CPAC that allows the Log Cabin Republicans, a homosexual activist group.
That is crazy. So you were originally set to go, though, weren't you, with Mass Resistance? Weren't you supposed to be going along with Brian? You weren't originally supposed to have your own table?
Yes, I bought my airplane ticket. I was ready to go. I was going to be there with Brian at CPAC and, you know, promoting their good work and the excellent book, Health Hazards of Homosexuality, that they put out. And now, you know, it's all up in the air. And CPAC is a very watered down, you know, this is not new in a sense that they've been trending liberal on social issues for a long time. They really are heavily focused on libertarian and defense, two legs of the Reagan stool. But of course, as you've talked about many times, Janet, Reagan's conservative stool had three legs, and they're boxing out the social conservative branch at CPAC.
That is insane. So they have gone from a few years back not allowing the Log Cabin Republicans to be a part of CPAC. I think at that time the leadership understood that that would be quite controversial and would change everything if they were to allow so-called gay conservatives to be part of the conservative movement. They kind of don't go together. Now it seems as if they've switched. And rather than defending pro-family groups and groups that are telling the truth about homosexuality and the homosexual agenda, now they're on the side of the Log Cabin Republicans, apparently.
Yes, and they allowed, at the last minute, a Family Research Council exhibit table, which is very interesting because that had not been a part of the plan before they talked to Brian Kamenker. Remember, Brian of Mass Resistance put in for his application, and then they called him and said, hey, you can't. We're not going to allow you based on something he said once.
Yes.
You know, which is ridiculous. I have on my website, I have a video of a log cabin Chicago float in the Chicago Gay Pride Parade, Janet, which is just vulgar, mocking the military with gay sexual innuendo. You know, that's the Log Cabin Republicans, and yet they're parsing Brian Kamenker's words, and now they're kicking out Americans for Truth.
Well, now, they didn't tell you directly then, from what I'm understanding you're saying here. They didn't call you and say, Peter, you can't, we reject your application. You just found out that the donor got his money back. Nothing was said?
I did not receive word. I followed up, and I don't want to jump ahead of the game here, but They just refunded the nation. Now, they might try to say it was too late, but remember, CPAC had told Brian Kamiker that they were looking to get more socially conservative groups as part of CPAC.
Really?
So if this is their way of looking for more socially conservative groups, they've got real problems. And I believe it's symbolic of the entire conservative movement, which is now welcoming in homosexuality as long as you vote Republican, you know, on a lot of issues. They're welcoming in homosexuality, and that could be the death knell of American conservatism, because at some point, Christians and people of faith are going to say, hey, this is not for me.
Well, here's what's really troubling about this. You have an awful lot of people who want to be Republicans, consider themselves to be opposed to the left and the left's agenda. That's what we have in common with a lot of these people. But increasingly, this was the same group, CPAC, that had invited Milo last year and then embarrassingly had to pull that invitation after some of his horrible comments came out about sex and young boys and all the rest. But the fact is, they wanted him before that. Until those comments came out, they said, Milo, come on in. And Milo, I mean, he was the face of gay conservatism, really.
Right. And it's just, you got to understand, it just is a dangerous road to go down, because at their heart, people who embrace homosexuality as a lifestyle, they have a deep need to rationalize that lifestyle. And so, yeah, they could be conservative on guns and taxes, et cetera. And we welcome that. We, you know, welcome them to vote for whoever they want to vote for. But when it comes to enshrining homosexuality as a right, as a civil right in our culture, and basically taking a stand against God, who says that homosexuality is wrong, I mean, that's the most important thing.
Right.
It's against God. This proud homosexual movement of Guy Benson, you know, Guy Benson says he has to give credit to past gay activists. Well, those were left-wing revolutionary gay activists. This is a revolution.
Yes.
And to attach a leftist social revolution to a so-called conservative movement just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And I wonder if the Family Research Council, and I think Concerned Women for America also are going to be at CPAC from what I understand. I wonder if they will have any stuff at their table, stuff at their booths, discussing this issue. Maybe they'll bring it up. Have you heard anything to that effect?
Well, yeah, I'm sure they will, Janet. But if we're reduced to like, hey, Family Research Council, can you speak for me? I mean, come on. Matt Schlapp says he wants to have a conservatism where there's a debate. By the way, I've never heard anything back from Matt Schlapp, who's the head of ACU, the American Conservative Union, which runs CPAC. I mean, they're treating us like little children who did something wrong. It's ridiculous. If there is a debate within conservatism, let's have it. Go ahead. You know, let's have this debate. But don't start doing this thing that the left does, which is banning the people because they think wrong about sodomy. They think wrong about homosexuality. Give me a break. Is this the type of conservatism we want, which is ridden with political correctness? And of course, it only is going to get worse. What's it going to be in 10 years? Are they going to ban negative discussions of transgenderism 10 years from now?
Yeah.
You don't want to go down this road.
No, it probably won't take 10 years. Maybe that's the cynic in me. But, you know, you and I have talked quite a bit over years about the issue of donors, big donors in the GOP, Peter Singer, some of these other big names. They give lots of money. Could this be the driving factor? What do you think?
It's possible. I haven't looked deeply into the donors at CPAC, but, you know, we know from Singer and others, you know, this is affecting the Republican Party. And I'm really afraid of where the Republican Party is going. You've got, now Donald Trump and the RNC both congratulated the Log Cabin Republicans on their 40-year anniversary, excuse me. And that's a bad thing, because you're congratulating a group which is built around, you know, its whole purpose, its raison d'etre is to promote the acceptance of homosexuality, which we know is immoral and God disapproves of.
Right.
So, you know, we're at this point where the big tent is getting so big. And then, of course, it gets to the point where they want to banish the conservatives, because gay activists do not like to have a real healthy debate. They don't like dissent.
Right. That's right. Well, where would they part ways, if at all, with the radical leftist homosexual activists? Are there any issues regarding homosexuality on which they would disagree? For instance, do the Log Cabin Republicans say, well, no, we don't think there should be gay marriage? Anything like that? Or are they simpatico with those two?
No, I know. I think on some religious freedom issues, they would be more likely to grant religious exemptions. But if you look at the Log Cabin website, they've got a lot of the same gay activist stuff that other homosexual groups do. For example, there's an equality map in there, which basically is, you know, monitors gay rights laws. They embraced so-called marriage. That's all you need to know. The Log Cabin Republicans embraced homosexual so-called marriage, especially after Obergefell. And so this is not a conservative group. They can complain all they want. and say that they're conservative. They may be conservative, some of their members, on other issues, but when it comes to homosexuality, they're just another variation of this leftist social revolution, and all the victors on the gay side, Janet, they call it a revolution.
Yep.
It's a social revolution. It's a bad one.
It is. Peter LaBarbera with us. We're going to go to a break. We'll come back on Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us. When a cake artist decides not to design a cake for Halloween, no one cares. But when that same artist declines to create a custom cake for a same-sex wedding, he's forced to defend his decision in court. That's what happened to Jack Phillips, and the Supreme Court is now deciding his case. This is an example of what happens when government punishes private citizens because it doesn't like their beliefs. And that's why your gift to the Freedom Fund is needed right now. Just $100 helps Alliance Defending Freedom defend your freedom and provide the necessary resources to fight these pivotal court battles. And thanks to a matching grant, your gift is doubled when you call right now. 866-700-1060. That's 866-700-1060. Your religious freedom is under serious attack, but Alliance Defending Freedom is on the front lines, providing help at no cost when your freedom is being violated. 866-700-1060, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. That's 866-700-1060. This is Janet Mefford for Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit Christian organization that helps people get out of debt. Here is Ann's story.
I had numerous credit cards and I was struggling with paying them off. I had heard about Trinity, so I made the call. They took care of all of my credit cards and now I am completely debt-free. The people at Trinity are very friendly. They will do whatever you need them to do in order for you to feel better about being in a very difficult place. My name is Anne, and thanks to Trinity, I'm debt-free for keeps.
If credit card debt has you down, Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your account, put a stop to late fees, and drastically reduce your interest. There is hope for tomorrow. Call Trinity at 1-800-793-8752. That's 1-800-793-8752. 1-800-793-8752. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Peter LaBarbera, my guest, Americans for Truth about Homosexuality. Well, Peter, you might not be allowed at CPAC. You've been telling us how you were just, I guess, handed your money back, your donor who was going to allow you to go to CPAC. Just like Mass Resistance was disinvited, you're not allowed to go either. But you're welcome here. I just want to let you know that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I'm welcome. I'm always, it's a great place to be welcome at.
Well,
and
thank you.
I do think that we all have to join together because we can't tolerate this kind of censorship. And,
yeah.
Political correctness.
No, that's right. Well, let's talk about this other issue because I really wanted to get your take on this. Breitbart had a story referencing a Catholic World Report story, so there were several sites involved here, raising this issue of why the transgenderism thing is spreading like wildfire. When you look at some of these statistics and how many people now are coming out and saying they're transgendered, and people are beginning to question this. Is this due to the fact that we just had all these transgendered people who are dying to come out as transgenders? Or, as this writer at The Atlantic had raised the issue a few years back, could there be a cultural cause? In other words, this big transgender industry seems to be rising up. Could that be part of the problem?
Absolutely, Janet. And I think this follows from the gay revolution we talked about. I love the phrase that you said, and thanks for sharing the article, by the way, semantic contagion.
Hmm.
All the language starts changing. Like the word cisgender, which yeah. I guess means normal.
Yes, right.
You know, they have to define the language to accommodate this latest aspect of the revolution. But this all happened before with gay. Now it's happening with trans.
Yeah.
And of course you're going to see kids. I mean, I see them all the time with these, you know, there's a lot of confusion out there. There's a lot of brokenness in homes. There's a lot of parenting issues. There's a lot of causes. But when elite culture, and I'm talking about the pundits, the academics, the doctors, and I'm talking doctors that push these grotesque body-changing operations and procedures. When we have TV shows like that one cable show, who now I'm forgetting the name of, that are pushing the transgender agenda, Of course, it's going to lead to more young people embracing this lifestyle.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is one of the things. It was an Atlantic Monthly article called A New Way to Be Mad by bioethicist Carl Elliott. He predicted all this, is what this writer says in Catholic World Report, when he wrote, "Once transsexual and gender identity disorder and sex reassignment surgery became common linguistic currency, more people began conceptualizing and interpreting their experience in those terms. They began to make sense of their lives in a way that hadn't been available to them before. And to some degree, they actually became the kinds of people described by these terms." So Elliot, as they wrote, was suggesting it's possible that our culture is not just revealing transgender individuals, it's creating them. If so, we can expect tremendous growth as an entire industry is emerging to meet the growing need. What is the mentality here that wants to encourage transgenderism? What do you see as far as the root of the motivation for wanting that to occur?
Okay, well, I think one of the main points is, Janet, that the article brings out is this is not uniform across the world and even across the United States.
Right.
Some parts are worse than others. And so I think that's just decadence. That's this postmodern, post-Christian world in which we live, in which, of course, some cities, especially urban areas, are more pronounced than others. And across the world, I'm sure you would not find a 2.8% or whatever the figure. And that's the Williams Institute is a pro-gay institute, by the way. So that's a biased source. But you would not see a uniform percentage of transgender or so-called gay across the world either. And so I think it's people looking to fill the void left by what used to be for many people was their belief in God.
Right.
I think that's the main point. But then it's other factors. You know, we're living in a deeply confused age where the authorities now have gotten behind this left-wing social revolution, and they're pushing at every turn. And kids are impressionable, and plus they want to rebel anyway. And so I think there's so many factors that, of course, you know, when we're practically teaching this now as normative to children, and of course it's going to spread.
Absolutely. And especially when they're not allowed to get any other narrative. Everybody has to be on board with the pro-gay, pro-trans narrative or else. And, you know, kids, if they never hear the other side of the story, of course, they're just going to take whatever is put out there. This was interesting. Michelle Curtello, the doctor who's the head of the American College of Pediatricians, had written this article for the Daily Signal about all of these ways that the medical field has been infiltrated with transgender ideology. And she said produces large-scale child abuse. One of the things she points out is that gender identity is malleable, especially in young children. And she points out from the American Psychological Association that prior to the widespread promotion of transition affirmation, up to 95% of prepubescent children who were distressed by their biological sex eventually outgrew the distress. Now, what's going to happen to these kids who are now told, you know, you have to transition, you've got to get hormones, you've got to maybe go through gender reassignment surgery when you get a little bit older? What happens to these kids when they grow up and perhaps say, oops, I made a big mistake and mom and dad pushed me in the wrong direction?
Well, I think they're like guinea pigs, Janet. I mean, it's like, you know, because a lot of times it's their parents who are going along with it. And by the way, sometimes there is the threat of suicide, as we've seen from some of the teenage kids.
Yes.
They say, mom, if you don't let me, I mean, there was a case here in Chicago where a beautiful girl had her healthy breast surgically removed before she was 18, Janet. And so and I think the threat of suicide is a big factor. We're not talking about, you know, that you parents can be manipulated. But what's happening is this is going to create a lot of problems. And of course, the gay lobby and the transgender lobby promote everything as a solution. Oh, this is our way to happiness. This is their famous phrase, who we are.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually the opposite. It's who you're not that they're asking people to become. And so they're adding all these complications in. These poor kids, rather than having a parent or authority figures that would guide them to the way God made them male or female, they're being pushed to experiment, and it's almost like the adults are along for the ride on this crazy transgender revolution. Oh, how exciting it is. Oh, the latest civil rights cause, so-called.
Unbelievable.
You know, the irresponsible adults, I blame they take the most blame, I believe.
Yeah, and here's a perfect example of this. This judge who just ruled that this 17-year-old girl who believes she's a boy has been given to her grandparents. Her parents, who are Christians, did not want her to go through hormone treatment. She's struggled quite a bit. The grandparents want to give her everything she wants, let her change her name to a boy's name, go through all this hormone stuff. And this judge took away custody from the parents in Hamilton County, Ohio, and gave custody to the grandparents. This isn't even based on science, Peter. When you look at the statistics on hormone treatments for young children or teenagers, when you look at the suicide statistics and how it doesn't bear up the fact that if you go through hormone treatments or sex reassignment surgery, that that will get rid of your suicidal tendencies. And now the courts are on board. What are they even basing this on other than we want to be pro-homosexual, pro-trans, and go along with the narrative, irregardless of the science?
They're basing it on the ideology, just like they did with the homosexual revolution. It's always that. It's a one-sided tilt towards the trans, whatever the latest thing is. And I'm sure in 10 years it'll be the pansexual movement or the polyamory movement, which is anything goes, basically. Any number of partners. It's very politically correct. We know that the law schools are very hostile to traditional views. First on the gay issue, now, of course, on the trans issue. And the courts follow, you know, the law schools. It's very, very dangerous when parental rights are thrown out the door for this revolution, this latest revolution. And another case, Janet, is that that principal in Massachusetts who is making a big deal. He's a man. He's decided he's a woman.
Yes.
And he's a publicity hound. And now the whole school has to deal with this issue of this gender rebel principal who decides that he wants to be the opposite sex. And it's all about him, of course. Everybody else has to follow, you know, he's in the middle, and everybody else has to deal with his, I think, mental disorder.
Yeah. It's really tragic because you have so many people who just don't seem to be rooted in enough truth and enough tradition to be able to have the spine to stand up and say, this is just flat out wrong. That if there's one thing that has become so disheartening to me, it's the shrinking number of people who will be the grown-ups in the room and say, are you all crazy? What are you doing? This is wrong. This is out of line with reality. Come on, come back to your senses. Why are there so few people who are willing to continue to speak the truth about this, which is so obvious?
You know what, Janet? I've thought about that a lot, too, and I think it's just the power. People tend to go, you know, like sheep. And there's a lot of power behind the whole homosexual transgender movement. I mean, you can't even watch the Olympics.
Yep.
This obnoxious gay skate, these two athletes now making a big deal of their homosexuality, Gus Kenworthy and Adam Rippon. It's obnoxious. You know, not even shaking the vice president's hand.
Yes.
But that side is so loud and clamorous, and they've got all the power elements, the power elites behind them. And the side of truth has these sort of, you know, like, I wish more people have come to the defense of Brian Kamiker and CPAC.
Me
I'm
too.
Seeing major conservative organizations who are not lifting a finger to help Brian. Why is that? I think it's the power element.
Well, I don't like thinking about that because the pro-family element has been so instrumental in getting Republican candidates elected, Peter. And I wonder how many conservative Christians across this land understand what is happening to our movement, that increasingly we're being marginalized by the GOP. And the left will love it because they'll say, good, because if you lose the evangelicals, you're not going to win any more elections. What about that angle?
Janet, you're right on. I remember when I first saw Dana Perino, the former Bush spokesman on Fox News, celebrating on Fox that gay marriage was no longer an issue in this latest presidential election.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my goodness, gay marriage issue, that elect her boss. Millions of people rallied for the defense of marriage. And now where's that movement?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm afraid if you leave it up to the power brokers, wherever they are, including sometimes even within the pro-family conservative movement, because there's a political correctness there. Brian Kamiker is a bold truth teller. He's a brave man who stood toe-to-toe with the gay lobby. Everybody should be defending this man.
I agree, and you too. AmericansForTruth.com, by the way, Peter's website. Peter, thanks a lot. Always great to have you here. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Should the government be allowed to force a pro-life pregnancy center to tell women where they can get an abortion? Obviously, the answer is no. But a California law is targeting these pregnancy centers and telling their workers they have to advertise for the abortion industry. Absolutely outrageous. And it's why Alliance Defending Freedom will be arguing on behalf of the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates and its affiliated California pregnancy centers on March 20th before the U.S. Supreme Court. The case is called NIFLA v. Becerra, and the outcome not only could affect every American's free speech, but it could save innocent lives. And right now, we're going to hear more about this case from Kristen Wagoner, who is Senior Vice President of the U.S. Legal Division and General Counsel of Arizona with Alliance Defending Freedom. Kristen, wonderful to have you here. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, I know this case is all about California's FACT Act, which was passed a few years ago. Tell people, if you would, a little bit about the law and the history here, why it was they enacted this law and how it is that they could possibly be doing this to pro-life pregnancy centers.
Sure. Well, in 2015, California passed a law, and it's called the Reproductive FACT Act. And it forces pro-life pregnancy care centers to basically provide free advertising for the abortion industry. The way that it does that is the law requires licensed medical centers that are pro-life, that offer their services free of charge to pregnant women, supposed to deliver a disclosure, a sign in their waiting room that says that California will provide free or low-cost abortion and contraception. And they have to provide the phone number that refers women to this free or low-cost abortion, which eventually gets them to Planned Parenthood and other abortionists. The law also regulates non-medical, non-licensed pregnancy centers who are nonprofit religious advocacy groups that are providing baby clothes and high chairs, and it forces them to give this large disclosure that says they're not a medical clinic, and they have to do it in so many languages that they can't even advertise where they are or that they exist. It's clearly targeting them to put them out of their work altogether.
Unbelievable. So I hadn't heard that part about the multiple languages. How many languages do they have to do it in, and why would they make it so prohibitive?
Well, it depends on the county they're in California. And for our clients, several of whom are in San Diego County, and most of California, most of the state is involved or is located in the place where you have to do it in six or more languages. So if you just think about that, an ad that says pregnant, need help, you then have to put in a 29-word disclosure saying you're not a medical clinic in six different languages, which means you have no internet advertising and you certainly can't even put it on a bus. I mean, there's just no way you can advertise. It's cost prohibitive.
No, that seems awfully punitive. So one of the things that they talk about as a rationale is the fact that thousands of women aren't aware of the public programs that would provide them with family planning, blah, blah, blah. But why is it the job of pro-life centers to communicate that? Why isn't that the job of the government? If the government wants to get the word out, or the pro-abortion industry wants to get the word out, why can't they manage that themselves?
Well, you're just spot on, Janet. I mean, that is exactly right. It is before the government can compel anyone to speak a message that violates their core convictions, they ought to have established that they're trying to get that message out themselves. And what studies show is that California itself doesn't even want to use the word abortion in when it's advertising for these types of services.
Huh.
And I think it's just as important to bring up. I mean, it's a little bit offensive to me because women are smart. We know that abortion is an option, and if we want to pursue that option, there's the internet, there are a number of resources. We're smart. We can figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. That's crazy. Well, and isn't it the case then, Kristen, that these notices that have to be put up have to be in a conspicuous place, too? That's part of the law, right? That they can't just take the notice and stick it under a desk or put it on the back of a door or something. It has to be where women can all see it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, they're using the four walls of their pregnancy centers as billboards to advertise for abortion. It tells you how big a font you have to have. It's got to be in conspicuous writing. These are just overwhelmingly large signs that are designed to point the way to abortion and to ensure that these pro-life clinics cannot engage in any advocacy, showing women about the opportunity that life gives.
Yeah. Well, now, as I mentioned before, on March 20th, you will have this argument going before the U.S. Supreme Court. I know this was previously at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which upheld the law. Mm-hmm. How important is this, Kristen, when you're talking about the effect, the repercussions of the decision that is to come down from the Supreme Court on this particular case? What do people need to know about the significance here?
Well, I think the first thing is just to take it directly to the pregnancy centers. These are the centers that are providing practical resources for women that support them in their choice and support them long after those babies are born. So it is a tremendous statement for life. It's where people of faith are putting their faith into practice and giving real options to women. But if you go a level higher than that, what we do know is that we sink or swim together. So if their rights, if they're forced to violate their conscience and to refer for a procedure that takes human life, and it's all because they're licensed by the state, all of us are in jeopardy, because most of us who are in our positions have to have some sort of government licensing. If the government can do this to religious pro-life advocacy speech, it can do it to anyone.
It's so true. Isn't it the case, if memory is serving me right, correct me if I'm wrong here, Kristen, but isn't it the case that California actually at some point admitted that to actually formulating the law to be somewhat punitive against the pro-life community?
Well, the bill sponsor made explicit statements during the testimony that he was set to go after these pro-life clinics. And he tried to say that, you know, they're not providing all the options to women, which is simply not true. Even the pregnancy pro-life clinics will say if a woman wants to discuss abortion, they'll discuss it with the woman. But the problem is they won't discuss it from the viewpoint that the state wants them to engage in.
Yes.
They're not going to be pro-abortion. They're going to be pro-woman and pro-life. So, you know, that's the complication there. The government cannot engage in viewpoint discrimination.
So in other words, would it be the case then from a legal standpoint that California would need to adequately defend its claim that it can compel speech having met all the other conditions that would warrant it? Is that really the essence of it?
Yes. So when someone is involved in, or when the government's involved in compelling speech, the government is supposed to meet the standard of strict scrutiny, that it provides a compelling interest, a state interest that is so important that it would justify compelling speech. And it has to be narrowly tailored, meaning there's no better way at getting this message to these people than violating the conscience of the pro-life clinics. And the government fails miserably in both prongs of that test.
Right. So this is a First Amendment case, but also it would seem there are other laws on the books that it would also violate, right? The strict scrutiny has been part of, you know, legal precedent and so forth. So it's not just one single solitary argument. It seems as though there are many arguments to be made in the favor of NIFLA.
Well, it is based on it, grounded in the First Amendment and the court's interpretation of that. So when the court's looking for a compelling interest, that's the only way it can force speech to be compelled under the First Amendment. But you should know there have been other tries by Planned Parenthood and abortion groups in other states and cities with similar laws. And for the most part, they've all been struck down as violations of the First Amendment.
Good.
So the Ninth Circuit's position here is really extreme.
Well, that's good. Well, this is why we were asking you to please be a part of helping Alliance Defending Freedom fight important cases like this. Your $100 gift to their Freedom Fund will provide the necessary resources to fight these kinds of court battles. 866-700-1060 is the number, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Kristen Wagoner with us. And Kristen, I just want to ask then, NIFLA, if I'm understanding correctly, they have, what, over 100 clinics, right, in California?
Yes, they have about 135 clinics in California and 1,400 nationwide, and there are about 2,000 clinics all over the United States that are affiliated with various organizations. So this is a great gift we have to advocate for women and support them.
Absolutely right. And I think you really said it well earlier that this is a case that affects everybody. This is a case that really is important for all Christians to get behind and to understand the vital necessity of standing on the First Amendment and our free speech rights. And we'll be praying for you, Kristen, as you guys go up before the Supreme Court on March 20th. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
God bless you. Thank you. And again, if you can help out by giving a gift, we are trying to raise $5,000 for Alliance Defending Freedom. We need 100 people to give a $50 gift or 50 people to give a $100 gift. 866-700-1060 is the number to call. 866-700-1060. Or again, there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Please help if you're able to, as the need is really urgent. 866-700-1060. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. Janet Mefford Today is proud to partner with Preborn to help save babies' lives.
Well, my name is Dan Steiner, and I'm the president of Preborn. Ultrasound truly is a game changer. When a mom comes into a pregnancy center under pressure to abort her child, perhaps the dad's gone, perhaps her mother is pressuring her. Most of the time in her heart, she doesn't want to abort, but what she needs is something that will give her the strength to choose life against the pressures that are forcing her to consider abortion. That's the ultrasound. If she hears her baby's heartbeat and sees that baby on ultrasound, everything's different. 80% of the time, she'll choose life.
Will you join us in saving babies' lives? A $140 sponsorship gives five babies a chance at life, and you'll get a picture of the babies' lives that were saved. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now 855-601-BABY or 855-601-2229 or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
From PureFlix comes Samson, the biblical story of the last of the Hebrew judges. From his anointing to betrayal to redemption.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. More information is available at samson.movie.
When a cake artist declines to create a custom cake for a same-sex wedding, he's forced to defend his decision in court. That's what happened to Jack Phillips, and the Supreme Court is now deciding his case. Your religious freedom is under serious attack, and that's why your gift to Alliance Defending Freedom is needed right now. Just $100 helps Alliance Defending Freedom provide the necessary resources to fight these pivotal court battles. Call 866-700-1060, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. That's 866-700-1060. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. From Pure Flix comes the biblical story of one of the last of the Hebrew judges, Samson, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Samson, now playing. More information is available at samson.movie. Well, I have some good news. Do you remember a few days ago I was telling you the story about this 12-year-old boy in Norway by the name of Kai, who was removed forcibly, quite violently actually, from his parents simply because they had decided to homeschool him? I want to play a little bit of that video that his mother took. It's been seen almost 750,000 times on the internet. And this is his mom, Teresa, filming this little boy who had been in public school and was removed from public school because of some bullying that was going on. They were homeschooling him. And it finally came down to these child welfare agents and police chasing this little boy down in the snow and tackling him. Listen to this. Cut one.
Can somebody please help us? Help! There's police! Barnabarn is stealing our child! In Norway! Because we want to homeschool. We don't want him. He has had death threats at this Asgard school in Oz. And they're punishing the family and the child for standing up to this oppressive state.
Well, just recently, I talked to Mike Donnelly, the director of global outreach at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And the happy news is that Kai has been returned to his parents. Now, when I talked to Mike recently, he explained a little bit of background about Kai's case. Listen to cut two.
Kai's and his mom are Canadian citizens, and father, Leif, is Norwegian. And they wanted to move to Norway because they, you know, they're at home of ancestry. Teresa's Norwegian descent, and they thought, let's go back to Norway. So Kai didn't speak Norwegian quite that well, and so I'm sure that he was the butt of a lot of jokes. Yeah. And there were kids there. I mean, he's 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And these kids are taunting him and threatening to do all kinds of terrible things to him. And this is getting worse and worse, and the family was telling the school about it. They're saying, look, this is really bad. You guys need to do something about this. And the school refused to do anything about it, or if they did anything about it, it had stopped. And so over Christmas, the family said, look, we can't send Kai back to that school. It's too dangerous. So they took him out. They let the authorities know that they were going to be homeschooling. And, they homeschooled. never got any warning that there was going to be any kind of threat that if you don't put him back in school, we're going to do something. Nothing like that. Out of the blue, the three police cars, the CPS agents show up, and they, Kai was hiding, actually, because they had been involved a little bit, because they had, when they came back to Norway, he didn't have a job, and in Norway, everybody's connected to social services because it's a socialist country.
Yeah.
And they were tracking him. Kai heard him, and he said, I'm going to hide, and he snuck out the window, but they heard him, and then he started running away, but the police chased him down, and anybody who's seen that video can watch what happened. They chased him down, they tackled him, he obviously didn't want to go, and the only allegation they had was that he wasn't in school.
Yeah, there it is, in the country of Norway. Now, Mike goes on to describe how amazing it is that Kai was returned to his parents so quickly. Listen to cut three.
It's really actually miraculous, because when I first spoke with the family about 2 weeks ago when this first happened, I figured it was going to be at least 5 or 6 months before they were going to get him home, because that's typically what happens in Norway when this agency takes children. It drags its feet. But, what we did was we reached out to the world. We reached out to the American homeschool community, and we made some noise. We had tens of thousands of people sign a petition, contact the Norwegian embassy. The video that you played the other day was showed around the world like almost 750,000 times. So Norway got the message that they better do something to right this wrong, because, as you pointed out, the only reason they took this child was because he was homeschooled. And the family took him out of school because he was being bullied. There were kids threatening him to do all kinds of terrible things to him. And what parent wouldn't do the same thing?
Absolutely. That was my thought when I saw that video. In fact, I thought, when she was filming that video of her little boy being chased through the snow by these government workers, I thought, I don't know how she stood there and filmed it. I would have dropped the camera and gone after those men, but I suppose that would have made things worse. And she definitely needed that footage to post it on the internet and to be able to draw international attention to it. And we certainly were happy to provide that attention, at least a portion of that attention, to her case. I'm thrilled that Kai is back. Now, you might be wondering, what is the deal with homeschooling in Norway? Because we have heard about other cases like this over in Western Europe. And every time we hear about these cases, it's a little bit shocking, because we're used to homeschooling being allowed and legal. And there's not a problem. You can't imagine anybody in America tackling a homeschooler in order to get them back from the parents. But here's the deal. Homeschooling is actually legal. Listen to what Mike said. This is cut four.
Homeschooling is legal in Norway. There are some people who do it. It's not very common. And so that's why it makes it even more outrageous that they should have intervened like this in the family. But they think they can get away with this kind of thing. The CPS agencies in Sweden and Norway are very powerful, and they're being investigated by European agencies, because there are so many children that are taken into custody, just totally out of proportion with the number of children that should be taken out of homes. And when you look at the reasons that are being given, they're just ridiculous.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very, very thrilled for this family. I'm glad that we have homeschoolers in this country who are willing to go to bat for other homeschoolers who are under siege in other parts of the world, and continue to pray for this family. It's just not right on a human level. It's just not right. The whole issue of, you have to be in school even though you're being bullied and taunted and threatened. You have to be in school because otherwise you won't be socialized. What about socialization that is harmful? I guess they don't care in Norway. And I guess when you have this sort of power, then who can fight back? Well, we can fight back. And so praise God that people did. Now, along those lines, I wanted to alert you to a bill regarding homeschooling that is now going on in California. It was introduced just a few days ago. It's called AB 2756, and HSLDA has some information about it over on their website. Here's what it's all about. The authors of this bill assert that the purpose of this law that they are proposing is to protect children in home-based private schools by mandating annual fire inspections of all private schools that file an annual private school affidavit. Okay, private schools, you don't think much about that, because that's not a bad thing, right? You should probably figure out that your building, your private Christian school or what have you, is in good shape and it's not going to have any fire hazards there and put the kids, the teachers, at risk. But this would also include private schools with fewer than 6 students, which are currently exempt from fire code inspections. Why are they exempt? Because these are private homes where children are homeschooled, and private homes should not be subject to fire inspections. I agree. This is crazy. Now, the bill is an attempt to give raw power, they say, to state officials to enter private homes of homeschoolers to, quote unquote, look around to make sure the children are safe. Well, the reason they're doing this is because of this Turpin family that's been in the news of late, that horrible case where the parents were chaining their children to the beds and not feeding them, and that horrible, horrible abuse that took place in the Turpin family. And then one of the kids escaped and told the police. Horrible, but that certainly isn't the norm for homeschooling families. So HSLDA is working with Family Protection Ministries and some other homeschool groups to try to get an effort together to defeat the bill. Here are two of the objectionable aspects of the bill that they mention. Government officials would be empowered to enter a home without a warrant, reasonable cause, or consent. We do have a Fourth Amendment, yes? In other words, this is a clear violation of protections that we have under both the federal and the state constitutions. Our homes are free from this type of unlawful action by the state. And also, the intent of the bill is to protect children from abuse. But there's no credible evidence that homeschooled children are more susceptible to abuse than other children. So to be fair, every single home with children in it should be subject to this type of scrutiny. Citizens wouldn't stand for this invasion of their homes. And if the state can do this to homeschoolers, nobody is safe from its overreaching power. The state of California passed out of control long ago, in my opinion. I mean, you think about what's going on just with the legal action that we were just talking about regarding the California FACT Act and the great work that Alliance Defending Freedom is doing to try to push back against that. I'm going to be arguing in front of the U.S. Supreme Court here in just a few weeks. This is California, folks. This is what they're doing. We want to intrude more and more. We want to have more and more power. Listen, in order for the state to be able to have that kind of power, they have to prove why they need that kind of power. And they don't. I mean, if you have abuse, aren't there already laws on the books that you can deal with abuse? It's just, it's overreach and it's very scary. And so if you live in California or you know homeschoolers who live in California, alert them to this so they can get involved and perhaps help the effort to fight against this kind of intrusive legislation. Well, we thank you so much for being with us on Janet Mefford Today. This hour has been brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752, 800-793-8752, or trinitycredit.org. Thanks a lot for being here. God bless you. We'll see you next time.